Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE. Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon. Presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just gone 5:05. You are listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio today, Jamie Stone, Hewitt, Grant Joel and Steve Holmes. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you all for coming in. If you're listening at home and you want to get involved, you can. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
So the first article is talking about tea breaks. Tea breaks in the workplace. It's the workplace tradition that was once taken very seriously. Now there are calls to reintroduce the much-loved tea and biscuit break, as research reveals a third of workers don't know the names of their colleagues. A study involving 4,000 staff found 70% take less than 15 minutes of break every day besides lunch, while some are too busy to take any time out at all. Now, think about if you don't work in an office now, if you have worked in an office, whether you took tea breaks, whether you took regular breaks, because I certainly don't now. I just kind of sit at my desk, do what I need to, come in, do what I need to do, and then go home. I'll eat lunch at my desk. I don't kind of walk away from my desk and have a conscious break at all.
Well, I'm quite surprised because everywhere I've been and everywhere I've worked, I've always had tea breaks, and all the people around me have always had tea breaks, and they're always kind of set in.
Are they properly set and arranged?
I was very surprised to hear that tea breaks had kind of gone by the wayside, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. So people had specific times for tea break and lunch and everything.
And everyone goes off together. But what I have noticed recently is you do see some people, you know, flip up the laptop and maybe do some personal emails or, you know, some social media and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't aware that had kind of gone by the wayside.
Yeah.
I think tea breaks always used to be a sort of from an industry point of view. You know, you worked in industry and you worked in a factory or a manufacturing industry, and you always had a tea break at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And 15 minutes or whatever, you know, and the tea was brewed for you by some retired guy that used to come in and do it. And you know, it's almost a black and white movie now to see that sort of thing. But yeah, I guess people working from home, working in offices, don't go to offices anymore. You wouldn't know your co-worker. I don't know. It seems a thing of the past, I guess.
It's a shame, isn't it? The idea of being in an office, where, I mean, it depends on the size of the office, obviously, but being in an office with people in your near vicinity and that you're seeing every day but not knowing their names. I mean, I can't imagine that. If I was sitting sharing a room with the same person every day, I'd make a point of saying hello, introducing myself. I think it's really weird not to.
We have a tea break, but we have a tea break in a bar every day at 10:30.
Okay,
so
nice.
But, and people know we're there, so people will pop in.
Okay.
But yeah, I've never been in an office environment. Well, not for years. But yeah, I mean, I think people should stop. But so the Spanish do grab a tea break and run with it. Yes. Tea breaks go on a little bit too long. I've never worked in that office environment where everyone just stops and stands
by a teapot. Sounds like a good place to work, having a tea break in a bar.
Yeah, definitely.
Not sure about 10 o'clock in the morning. But
it's a coffee.
It's a coffee. But I always remember working in offices when it's kind of, when you're discussing breaks and everything, that the controversy when people smoke and how they always automatically kind of get more breaks, and you get people who don't smoke going, well, I'm still at my office. You know, they go out for a cigarette 3-4 times a day while I'm still sitting at my, you know, that's come up a few times over the years. Not here, I mean, like in office, proper office jobs, I mean.
Yeah, there was quite a few people got quite upset at times when you know, kind of the rules changed, didn't they? And they'd see all their colleagues out having a cigarette break by the designated smoking area, and they were still working. And I remember walking in from, as an outsider, walking into a company to deliver some training, and they were most put out by the fact that some people were taking, you know, they were working out pretty much how much time they spent smoking, and they were saying, you know, we're doing an hour to 2 hours extra work than them a day.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not fair.
No, not fair at all, according to the people who were not smoking in the office.
No, exactly. Exactly. From smoking to sleeping, there was an article that made me chuckle. The woman says, I climb into bed with a sense of dread. My partner goes straight to sleep and I fume with resentment. And so she was obviously talking about the fact that she really struggles to get to sleep, and her partner, his head hits the pillow and off he goes. So there was lots of kind of advice on different things that we can do to get us in more like in the mood and in the right environment so we go to sleep quicker. So I just kind of thought it was an interesting subject, sleep. I just wondered if any of you had trouble sleeping, or whether that's changed over the years, or whether you go to sleep quite easily, or different routines that you put into place to make sleeping easier.
I think going to bed at different times may help, and rather than sort of going to bed at the same time where one goes straight to sleep, the other doesn't. But certainly, I personally wake up regularly at 3 a.m. all the time.
Really?
Yeah, all the time. Basically, for 30 minutes, I put my earphones in, listen to a radio, and have a little drink
listen
of water.
Listen to me and fall off the
Unfortunately, it's not you, no. I could get it on catch-up, I guess. And then go back to sleep again. But it's just a habit. It seems to be a habit. I don't know why. And it doesn't matter whether I've had a drink or not. It's still happens.
3 o'clock every morning, wake up half an hour, and then go back to sleep.
Yeah, it's weird.
Amazing. Yeah. And has that been going on a while?
Yeah, probably for 18 months, 2 years or so. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know why. But.
And you can't kind of put it down to any particular reason?
No. I mean, it annoys my wife quite a lot, obviously, because I don't do it quietly, obviously. You know?
Need to let everyone know that
you're awake. Absolutely. Yeah. So, but it's just a habit.
Yeah.
I think it's a habit. It is a habit.
Wow. Yeah.
Maybe the whole sleep thing's a habit. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
I've only ever been envious of people who can go to bed and then their head hits the pillow and they go straight out. I've always been envious. The only time that I've found it irritating is actually when they snore, and you think, if they get to sleep before I do, they're going to snore away. So I have had some girlfriends that have snored considerably louder than is appreciated, and that's a little bit hard work.
That's not fun.
Other than that, I think they're very lucky.
So are there things that you've tried, like listening to music or a dark room, or you know, different things that help getting you to sleep quicker?
Yeah, I think I'm quite a light sleeper, so you know, I just do my best to make sure that I've got nothing ticking away on my brain, and there's nothing going on in the background that's you know, going to keep me awake. But yeah, I mean, it can be a chat. If I've got anything on my mind, that's the time my mind ticks. Which is, you know, which is really irritating at times.
And it can be really difficult to turn it off.
Yeah,
you know,
very
people
difficult,
just kind of say,
difficult.
Oh, just clear your mind and relax and count to 10. And the amount of times I've counted to 100 and then gone, okay, I'll start again. 1, 2, and come right back to the beginning.
I'll do it in Spanish.
But funny enough, counting, I know it's a really old, kind of old wives' tale, counting sheep and things. But when you are counting, it's kind of difficult to think about something else. So that has worked for me quite a lot recently. laying in bed, if I'm thinking about lots of things, then I just and I do because, like, I suppose it's got a similar feeling to taking deep breaths and kind of getting you relaxed. So I count slowly, so like 1, 2, 3, that kind of pace. So, but in my head, obviously. And that does, like, it automatically kind of slows your breathing down and relaxes you.
Yeah, you
kind
of sleep then,
don't you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I count to 100 backwards.
Yeah, that's
do you?
100 down better, to 1, yeah. That's a lot better.
Mm. Oh, OK.
Because you have to think about the numbers.
Yeah,
more.
But doesn't thinking kind of keep you awake?
No.
No?
I never get to 70.
Really?
I can't remember going past 70.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to try.
And if you miss
that
one, you've got to start again.
Okay.
But I get out of bed regularly
like
and make
work.
I get out of bed regularly and make a list. And as soon as I've made the list, I go to bed and my worries are on a bit of paper.
Yeah, a lot of people say keep a notepad and a pen by your bed. And
yeah.
Because things come to you at night, don't they? You know, you think, ooh. And all of a sudden, you write that down. I'm a great believer in, problems. You find solutions to your problems when you least expect it, like, in a certain sleep state.
Yeah.
But I think Beverly wrote that article because as soon as she gets fed up with me, because she says it's bad to just go straight to sleep. She's read somewhere where it's bad if you can just go straight to sleep.
Oh, really?
But I read a book, I wait, and then I just, boom, good night, boom, gone. But I do wake up a lot now. And I've got a sleep tracker on my wrist. And it tells me I've had a great night's sleep. And I know I've woken up about 8 times and looked at the clock.
Might be an age thing. Might just be, when you get older, you don't need as much sleep. Mm. You still go to bed at 10:30, 11 o'clock, whatever. But you don't need the 8 hours anymore. I don't know.
I've already noticed that. I can't believe it. I remember only about, 15 years ago or something, I feel like I used to say to myself, I couldn't survive on less than 8 to 10 hours sleep a night, and I couldn't understand how people could do less than that. Mm. And I reckon I get on average 7 hours a night, and I'm absolutely fine with that.
Was it Mrs. Thatcher that did 3 hours or something?
Something like that, yeah. And I think, that's madness. Yeah. That does seem a bit mad, though, doesn't it? So one of the things that they say in this article, a bit of advice, is stop all that sofa snoozing. I kind of find if I do have a, which obviously very rarely, but have a nap, then that can make it harder to go to sleep at night. Try and like stay awake with like matchsticks in your eyes so you don't fall asleep, because then you won't fall asleep later.
I'm a bit of a believer in if you have the opportunity, obviously, and it's convenient, a little 10-minute nap can be, really, really helpful.
Yeah.
I think listen to the body. If it's tired and you want to have a little sleep, have a little sleep. I mean, I can do that quite regularly, and it doesn't.
I
wouldn't say it affects me in a negative way. I always feel like, that was really needed, and I feel a lot better for it.
Yeah. Oh, I do after I've done it. Well, I do it, and I think, I feel better for that. But then however many hours later, when it comes to going to sleep, it sometimes takes me longer, and I think, that's because I had that 20-minute nap.
At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I could just drop off like that. I mean, it's so easy. You think, why can't I do that at 10 or 11 o'clock?
Yeah, exactly.
It's annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Siestas? Do you have a siesta?
Not really, no. Maybe a little bit of a, we call it a power nap, but that's about it.
We're a siesta household.
Are you really?
An hour in the afternoon, but...
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I've been here.
Well, you've been about at 10 o'clock, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah. we just get more done in the afternoon.
Brilliant.
Wake up and just go out and just do more. It's just, because I work with a lot of tradespeople that aren't around in the afternoon, so I have to wait till they come back to work. We fell into this routine, and
might
anyone
well
that comes on holiday to the house has a siesta. It's all very peaceful and very nice.
Nice.
And I don't think that affects your night time at all.
No.
I think you get used to it, don't you? You get a routine and you get used to it. I'm a morning person. I like to get up and do whatever I've got on my list, or do as much of it as I can in the morning, and then take it easy in the afternoon, which is probably why I kind of go... and do that quite easily, but I think it is a routine. You get used to it. If you've got a job that you have to get up, well, you've experienced that, Hannah, when you have to get up really early consistently, it becomes normal to you in the end, doesn't it, after a while? Or
only,
I felt that
only just it's only just starting to for a while after stopping doing the breakfast show. I was sleeping to not late, but later than people imagined. People imagine that I'd wake up automatically at 6:30. That's never happened. That's literally never, even though I did it for 9 years. As soon as I don't set the alarm, I sort of automatically wake up at about 8 o'clock every morning. And for me, I kind of feel like that's quite early. When I was doing breakfast, you know, at the weekends or whenever I wasn't working, I'd wake up at like 10 o'clock.
It's a strange thing, isn't it? So when you think about it, if you set your alarm because you're going on a flight at 4 a.m. or something, always 10 to 4, you wake up. Or
yeah,
quarter
it's
to
weird,
4.
Isn't it?
Why?
Yeah. You know? Very strange. I couldn't rely on it, though. I'd definitely have to set the alarm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because then I wouldn't sleep thinking, what if I don't wake up? So I'd have to set the alarm. They talk about here as setting a go-to-bed alarm, which I think is a bit much. Setting an alarm telling you to go to bed. I think that's a bit silly,
isn't
it?
It's all about routine, isn't it? Trying to create a routine for your body clock. I think that's the theory. Anyway.
Yeah. Just look at the clock.
But it's become more... it's more in the papers and more in the media all the time, sleep, isn't it? I mean, it's more discussed now than it's ever been. I do notice that articles about the Twinning Sleeps thing. It's done by Twinning's Tea.
Oh, Twinings Tea.
So they're probably releasing some new sort of sleeping herbal
sleep
remedy.
Tea. Go to sleep tea. That'll be the next thing, won't they? We'll take a break before we come back and talk about gender-neutral toilets.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Men Talk with me in the studio today, Jamie Stonehewer, Grant Joel and Steve Holmes. There's an article that we talked about last week on Women Talk that I thought would be really interesting to ask you about. So it's talking about gender neutral toilets. It's written by a female journalist, Joan Smith, who talks about a personal experience when she went to the Lyric Theatre in London's Hammersmith. She said she went to go to the loo and there was a sign up saying loos, all genders welcome. She said, I hadn't used an all genders loo before, one which, unlike on trains or planes, both men and women can use at the same time. She said she felt quite uncomfortable. When she pushed open the door, she froze. On her left were five urinals. At the far end, the door, just a couple of feet away from the row of urinals, was a lone cubicle. The space was empty, but it was clear that to use the cubicle, women were expected to walk past a row of men peeing. She said, with time ticking on, I didn't have a choice, but before I could leave, a man came in to use the facilities. We stared at each other in equal horror. He clearly felt as uncomfortable as I did. When I read that, the first thing that sprung to mind was the fact that why have men got five places to pee and the women only have one, when everyone knows whenever there's a toilet queue, there's always a really long queue for the women's and not that much of a queue for the men's. So I think the fundamental error, first of all, is that there's only one toilet for the women and five for the men. That's the first thing. But how would you feel about that? Would you think that's weird, or are you not really bothered? Would it not bother you if you're having a pee and you've got women walking behind you going into the toilet? Do you think it's kind of weird, or would it not bother you?
Lots of nightclubs over the years, many women have walked into the toilets while we've been stood at a urinal.
Yeah.
So it's not something new. But
no. But normally that would be women not being able to wait for the queue and just...
jumping in the gents.
But I've confessed, done that before in a nightclub, and sometimes the men have gone, oi, what are you doing? This is the men's, and they don't like it. Well, and it's because it's their toilet. So it's not necessarily automatically a...
The problem is with all old theatres, schools... I've got a friend who's a school teacher in New York, and now they've got gender toilets on different levels. So now the boys are leaving and they've got to go down two floors to find a toilet, or they've got to go to a gender neutral one, and it's making his teaching virtually impossible because people disappear. And they've got legitimate reasons to disappear. It's a toilet break. But and you can't change old buildings. You can't go into someone like the Lyric Theatre and start knocking out all the urinals and put cubicles in there because the plumbing's not made for it. So a lot of old buildings, museums, they try to get... It's like putting in disabled toilets. It's very hard after the fact to start putting ramps into buildings and stuff like that. So that's probably the reason the Lyric Theatre's done that. They've ticked a few boxes. We've got gender-neutral toilets. But if you go in the ladies, which is now a gender-neutral toilet, the poor man's got no urinal on the same footing. So, it's difficult for old buildings. And new buildings, God knows what architects are putting into buildings nowadays and what they're changing. But, it's a difficult situation. And... we're back on woke again, aren't we? Gender fluidity.
Yes, everywhere.
It's not a personal experience, so I don't know. But I would not be alarmed if a woman walked in any toilet anywhere. I was in a restaurant last night, they only had one toilet. The urinal had been fitted by a 6'4" plumber because it was up by my chin, so no one was ever going to use that anyway. And then the sign said, please be neat and wipe the seat. Well, lift the seat, lads, you know. And it was just, there were people queuing. They were sat next to our table, we were having dinner, and they were sat in chairs like a bus stop.
Oh, no.
So you know, how do they get away with that nowadays? Only having one toilet in a restaurant, I don't know. In a popular restaurant as well.
Mm. So,
yeah, but yeah.
So it wouldn't bother you?
No, it wouldn't bother me personally, no.
No?
No, I can get a stage fright whether it's a man or a woman walking past or standing next to me, to be honest. I think urinals possibly, it's a bit more intrusive. But if it was just a row of cubicles, then I wouldn't really see an issue with that. And I think, you know, sometimes, and I'm not speaking about myself, but sometimes there are men, I think, that are very disrespectful to toilets, let's say, and the way that they use them.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's why women might be offended by having to share the same space as men. I always hope I leave a toilet in the same condition.
Same like way that. As you found
but,
it.
I mean, yeah. They're, you know, I think men are... Well, from what I hear, they get accused of being you know, a bad aim and various other things. Mm. So I can get that side of it would be annoying for the ladies. But other than that, I wouldn't find it offensive at all.
No. Really.
I think it's the urinal that's the issue, in the sense that, you know, like I said, if it was a row of cubicles, then, you know, even the airport, you know, Manchester Airport has got cubicles, gender neutral toilets.
Have they?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But there are no urinals.
No.
You know? So,
yeah,
I think it's probably that's the issue. And I would agree with that. That is an issue.
It should be all cubicles.
Yeah, like you said, you know, the Lyric Theatre probably thought, well, we can pay £5 for a sticker on the door, or we can pay 50 grand to get the toilets changed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So sticking with woke, Nike has gone woke. They've come under fire after paying a transgender influencer called Dylan Mulvaney to promote its female sports clothing range. She's 26. She's on hormones to transition to be a woman. I'm saying she because that's how it's how she's called in the article. So she's on transition to be a woman, but she is a man, as in physically, so she hasn't had any operations as of yet, so she still has male parts and doesn't have breasts. And they're using her to model a sports bra. So she looks absolutely gorgeous, I think, in this red dress. So it looks very, very attractive. And here in the Nike outfit in leggings and a sports bra. I personally think it's weird having any, whether it's a man or a woman, advertising a sports bra when they don't have any breasts, because the whole point of a bra, especially a sports bra, is to kind of assist women with breasts. So I think it's weird having a model that doesn't have breasts, regardless whether they're male or female or transgender. I think that's a stupid mistake anyway, personally.
Well, I think it's probably Nike who are, you know, it's a great advertisement for Nike because it's, you know, it's over the news day in, day out for a week or so. But I agree with you. I mean, why? Why would you do it? Mm. Why would you need one?
I know.
No, I don't know.
Exactly.
It's almost saying, well, we're going to support it no matter what. So here's an example.
Yeah, exactly. They're trying to...
Support it being the word.
Support it being the opposite word, yes.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I find it strange. But they're just trying to tick boxes, aren't they? Definitely. Yeah. But she looks fabulous. She looks absolutely fabulous. And maybe people will buy more sports bras because of it. Who knows? I mean, there's an issue with the whole... never mind the gender thing, not at all, but just the weight thing, you know, models being a certain size. I feel like that sort of comes into it a bit as well, because, you know, she's
very skinny, isn't she?
Really, really skinny, but most models are, you know, so she looks great. She looks all right, but I mean, I don't know how realistic.
I prefer a bit of curves, to be honest with you, Hannah.
Mm.
People say, well, that's great, but for me...
Yeah.
But if you curves. Hadn't known that... That person was. if you hadn't known that girl or man was a changed gender, I mean, you'd just think, well, it's quite a flat chested woman advertising.
Yeah, you would,
bra, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you would.
Nike have had to say, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know unless you know who they are. I don't think you'd necessarily know.
No, you wouldn't look at her or him and say, oh, that's a him.
No, not at all. Okay. Moving on to relationships. Breaking up is hard to do for young lovers. The older generation are fond of saying the youth of today aren't tough enough, and it seems they're correct, at least when it comes to their love lives. Researchers have found that young lovers don't have the courage to tell someone they're no longer romantically interested in them, preferring instead to ghost them. The heartless practice of not responding to calls, emails, and social media messages is the easiest way to let someone down, they said. Oh, shocking. Or is it?
Terrible. How was it last week or the week before? Rupert Murdoch and Jerry Hall. Mm-hmm. If she got a text message to say that the marriage was over and the lawyers would be in touch. You know? And he's 80 year old.
Yeah.
So.
A text message to say you want to get divorced is unbelievable.
She was probably on his private yacht somewhere, so...
Yeah, probably.
To text him, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. That is terrible, sending someone a text for marriage, though. I mean, it's not like you've been dating for 2 weeks. I mean, that's awful. I mean, what do we think about ghosting, the idea of a difficult conversation and just thinking, oh, I'm just not going to bother?
Well, it's definitely the easy way out, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
I think if you're, and it does depend on the individual, you know, if you've got someone who's maybe really emotional and it's really hard work, and if you might have tried to break up with them before or something's happened, and you
they
think,
just won't
oh,
go.
I can't go through that again. So, yeah, you know, a little bit of...
There's a time and a place for ghosting, is what you're saying.
It's fine. I guess it's, you know, why do you want the relationship to end? So they could have done something, you know, awful or, you know, so
yeah.
You might think...
So why do I open a conversation? Yeah, yeah, no,
it
that's...
was always difficult, wasn't it? When when you're youth, it was always difficult to
to
a breakup. You know?
Yeah,
you always got your mate to do it.
It's a great heading, isn't it? Breaking up is hard to do.
Yeah.
That is so true.
It is so true. Breaking up is hard to do.
Mm. Well, if anything, the technology has made it easier for people, hasn't it?
But, yeah.
You know, in our,
exactly.
It's hard to ignore someone who you've fallen out of love with in a bar or or anywhere. So, it's not difficult online to ignore anyone, is it? You just ignore them. You just don't respond.
We didn't have phones back then.
No, exactly.
If someone wrote a letter to you and you didn't reply, well, that was it. End of. Yeah. I've finished my debate. It's over. Well, okay. Yeah. What's the response? Was I ghosting?
Am
I
not?
Was that me ghosting by not writing a thank you letter?
Yeah, you just blame the Royal Mail. That's what people would do.
Well, it never arrived.
So we will take another break and then we'll be back with the headline, Is It Ever Right to Keep an Engagement Ring After a Breakup?
TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio today is Jamie Stone, Hugh Grant, Joel and Steve Holmes. Gary says, you should never ghost as much as you should never tickle a grinning monkey. There we go. Sensible comment from Gary. So, is it ever right to keep an engagement ring after a breakup? So, Amanda Platel, who has strong opinions on most things, has said, hell yes. She's been engaged 5 times and tells various stories of what she's done with various engagement rings. She was thinking about it because Rupert Murdoch recently, his fiance, they called off their engagement after being engaged for 2 weeks, and he'd just given her an engagement ring worth £2 million. So she was thinking, I wonder if she's going to keep the engagement ring. She probably shouldn't if it's worth that much money. But then how do you decide as and when? So do we have strong opinions on this?
Right. Give the rings back. That's what I say.
Give the rings back. Every situation.
Well, you know, it sounds like, you know, we're not in the £2 million bracket, obviously, but, you know, it just sounds like sour grapes to me. If you want to keep the ring, it's usually smells of sort of like, you know, vindictiveness and I hate you, so you're not getting anything back. And you know, people always row over material things, don't they, when they break up, I think. You know, but there's usually one party.
Yeah, but not married, are they? It's an engagement. So, I mean, is an engagement ring a gift with reservation?
Well,
it's a gift.
Well, exactly. You don't give other presents back when you split up. You don't go, oh, you find out what he's bought me and start giving it all back, do you?
It's a gift, though. It's a two-way thing, right? It's a two-way thing.
No,
you know,
you're giving the gift.
So why in a marriage, then, do people have to give stuff back? Why in a marriage do people have to give stuff back? Because preliminary, you know, an engagement is just before the marriage, right? So that's what you do. The first step is an engagement, then you get married. And then once you're married, you have to split. Everything, right? So where does the engagement thing fit in there?
You don't have to split everything. People can have an amicable divorce.
But they still split it, Hannah, don't they? They still go, let's be amicable. You can have 50 of this and I'll have 50 of that. But that's amicable, but they still do that. Not many people go, you can have everything. I know there are people. You can have everything, but...
Well, no, but I mean, also, it doesn't have... Not everything has to be 50-50, because not everything is tied up around...
It's usually not paid for 50-50, is it? No. You know, an engagement ring is something you buy to give to somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's not like it's joint money. You know, we've worked hard for 20 years and now we're getting divorced.
Yeah.
It's like, you know...
It's a... present.
Present.
Yeah, but it's almost like taking something and then going, I'm just going to take it for that. And then actually 2 weeks later, you're down the line, you know? Sorry.
I suppose it depends how long the... I guess there's so much riding on it, I would say. It depends how long the engagement is and why you've called the marriage off, I suppose.
Well, it's a token of love. You can always get the ring back and recycle it for the next one, so
I've still got mine.
So what from... I'm just trying to work out what you mean. Engagement rings that
I got back because they were so nice.
Okay.
I still have.
Did you ask for it back?
Yes.
Okay. And were they okay about giving it back?
No.
So it was a contentious issue.
It was a contentious issue, but there was a lot of other things surrounding that. But for sure. Yeah. Well, I don't. I see it as part of that next step. That's a way. That I would see it. Well, and I guess, is it a gift? I don't know, it's a two-way thing for me. It's just a two-way thing. It's not like a birthday present. This is your birthday, you get one every year, and I'm going to give you a gift. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, how many people do you know that, you know, in a relationship, then they buy, you know, the guy or the woman even might buy the person a car, but when they break up, they, you know, they want half that car back. Or in fact, the whole car. You know, loads of things like that happen in life, don't they? You know, where do you draw the line about, I'm just going to get that? Well, that was a gift, so you're not going to get that back. But actually, you know, some of this stuff is still yours.
Yeah. It's complicated, isn't
just
it?
Just move on.
Ladies, give the rings. Give the rings back. Do the
it
right
didn't
thing.
Work. Move on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? When you're, I mean, the whole thing with stuff is a really difficult thing because... So many things that you have as a couple, there'll be things that I don't know. So we don't really listen to CDs anymore, do we? It's all digital. But you know, if there's a CD that was more your CD as opposed, you know, that you liked, that's different to, you know. I'm trying to think of something that I don't know. A nice photo frame which has got a picture of the two of you in is not about the picture, is it? It's about the frame. So who bought the frame and where? It just can get really, really messy. And I just think when you break up, I don't know. Sometimes there'll be. I'm trying to work out what I'm trying to say here. I don't know. I think material things become less important because the relationship isn't as important. But that's only stuff that's kind of tied to relationship-y things.
For the example you gave, had five engagement rings that she's kept.
Yeah.
So obviously it's a little bit of a, you know, well, let's get engaged. And then let's break up. I'll have the ring. Don't know how much it is. Thank you very much. And look at this. I've got a lovely collection of rings. There's something it just doesn't quite sit well with me.
I think she should answer why she's been engaged five times and got five rings.
Really. Absolutely.
You get on your knee or however you want to do it. You propose to someone, you put a ring on the finger and then they get a wedding ring when they get married.
Yeah.
That's the way I was.
I mean, it's win-win for them,
to me.
It?
You know, so if we got divorced tomorrow, would I expect my engagement ring back? Probably not. But I wouldn't expect her to wear the wedding.
As long as you keep the house.
But you've been together for a long time, haven't you? So you've had the marriage, you've had the relationship, and so it's a lot longer. But people, I mean, in the context, I'm thinking is you get engaged and a year later you break up, or, you know what I mean? It's not like you've been together for 20
years. I don't think you should have a collection of engagement rings at home. No, I agree with you on that.
No, definitely not.
But, it's funny because my wife lost both her wedding ring and her engagement ring on holiday.
Yeah.
And I had to buy both.
Oh, you had to buy them both again?
Why am I buying another engagement ring? Well, yeah, that's all over and done with.
And you bought it again?
Well, yeah, we went and got some.
Jamie, you've lost face. You've lost face.
No, no, not with me.
I wanted her to be happy.
That's lovely.
She had two rings on her finger, and then she only had none, and then so, yeah.
Oh,
she just threw them in the sea, like getting rid of some seaweed in the flip-flops.
Oh,
and
God.
So, yeah, that's what I thought, well, okay, we better replace the set.
Yeah. Oh, but, nice.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure there's lots of jewellers full of second-hand engagement rings, aren't there?
And they can
sell them.
I reckon.
So,
yeah. There's a piece here which is on the back of this article, which I thought was really odd. The headline reads, "I'm such a strict mother, another parent reported me to social services." She gives an example. She says, "The temperature was below freezing as I dropped my 14-year-old son off at scout camp, just as he realised he'd left his sleeping bag at home. Did I jump in the car and do the hour-long round trip to fetch it for him? No, I did not. I simply blew him a kiss and drove away. I was fully aware that he would spend the night shivering with nothing but the tarpaulin of the tent, shielding him from the elements, but I felt no guilt at all. Michael was old enough to take full responsibility for packing his own camping gear. When I arrived home, I even texted him a picture of it with the message, 'Your sleeping bag looks nice and cosy in the hallway.'"
Oh,
that's
brilliant.
So mean.
She could keep my ring.
That's so mean. I mean, I wouldn't do that to my partner or my friend or... I find
anyone.
That shocking. Yeah.
I would if it was a round trip for an hour. They've got to take responsibility, these people.
Do you think that's good parenting?
No,
I'm joking aside, and it's fine if you do.
But I do think you have to, you know, teach people values and to take responsibility.
Yeah.
That sounds very harsh that they were shivering. I mean, I'm not sure they would have been shivering that badly, but...
Yeah, I don't... I mean,
yeah, the principle of it, yeah.
It's interesting to know, you know, if her child that she's talking about is always forgetting things and really, like, disorganised and not interested and, you know, instead of packing, he's playing on his video game, that kind of thing, and she's having a constant battle, then that's slightly different. But for her to kind of just say that for no reason, I find really shocking.
Yeah, I would say that. I should take responsibility for you, and then I think that all the way home, and then when I got home, I'd get sent back again with the sleeping bag, you know.
Exactly. Well, she says that that basically parents are far too soft on their kids.
I do agree with that.
Yeah?
I think they are far too soft. I think it's got to the point now where no one can be disciplined for fear of, you know, being singled out, and it does create problems. It definitely does create problems. How, you know, discipline is an interesting word, and how you discipline is also an interesting topic. But certainly, you know, parents are too soft, and sometimes they're too soft just through fear of what other people might say or think.
Mm. That she says in the article that there is a where is it? Oh yeah, I know parents who are actually scared of their children.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, isn't it? That's not good. But only because the child necessarily is violent or anything, but just, you know, the child kind of answering back and
playing up and,
exactly.
and causing a scene and, you know,
exactly.
being in a shop and ranting and raving, all of that stuff. That's just, for me, really bad management. You know, you do have to have discipline. I mean, you know, within reason, you do have to have discipline. People have to learn and be able to learn to take responsibility. Otherwise, they grow up to be spoiled brats and they're horrible people.
Mm.
Yeah, I think if she got reported for that as well, she's, you know, she's scared of that. It's, you get reported to social services or something like that because out of spite and not because you've actually done something.
Yeah.
It's up to you to prove yourself not guilty, and which can be a very difficult and stressful process, I guess.
One of her kids said, "Mum took me to the police station for stealing sweets."
Yeah.
That seems a bit extreme, but again, that's definitely learning a lesson.
Mm. Well, I've heard of that before, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. There's a family story somewhere like that. And it's, yeah, that's good. You've done wrong and you've got to learn that you've done wrong and there's consequences.
Yeah.
I mean, sweets are a bit severe, but yeah, but where's it stop?
Mm.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating that there's always, like, watching films or TV series, there's always that kind of moral dilemma. If a family member, either your child or your partner or your parent or whatever, was to commit a crime, how far would you go either to cover up that crime and to protect your loved one, or would you literally march them to the police station? I find that such an interesting kind of moral dilemma.
Well, it depends on the crime, obviously, but, you know, but yeah, it is a dilemma, isn't it? But you would hope that the crime wouldn't be anything, you know, too serious.
No, and a lot of the time in these shows, they are really serious, aren't they? I mean, there's, we're talking murder and things like that, and it's, great, makes great telly. Always makes great telly. When it's not real life.
Drama.
Yeah, exactly. We better take our last ad break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the last part of today's Men Talk with Jamie Stone, Hugh Grant, Joel and Stephen Holmes. Stephen, I called you Stephen. Where did that come from?
That's my mother's name.
Am I telling you off? there's an article here which we talked about last week with the ladies, and I thought it would be interesting to get your take on it. So, the wife of a top footballer has ignited a debate over using violence to retaliate against child bullies after praising her teenage daughter for punching one in the face. Bianca Austin, married to former Southampton striker Charlie Austin, told of her pride after her 16-year-old struck the girl following weeks of being called names. She basically tweeted about this, saying, "After numerous phone calls to the school and nothing changing, today, when being called names, my daughter finally punched the bully in the face. Proud mum." And she had a mixture of responses. Somebody wrote back saying, "Good on her. She did exactly what was needed to be done. Shame on the school, though, for not sorting the bullying out when you first called them." And someone else said, "Your daughter should not be hitting anyone, ever. I get that bullying is awful and harmful, but when I said your daughter's actions would make things worse, you can now see where I was going. Bullying someone back by hitting is also bullying." What do we think?
I don't agree with hitting someone back, hitting a bully, just because you hit them back means that you're a bully too. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that I can't abide bullies or bullying.
Mm.
You know, it's just one of my big bugbears. And I've seen, you know, witnessed several times where people have bullied people I know, have been bullied, etc., etc., and it just continues. It just continues. If they don't do anything about it, and society doesn't do anything about it, or the schools or whatever, it just continues, and it makes people's lives miserable. And I've seen people retaliate, and you know, finally, you know, I've had enough and retaliate, and the bullying stops. And I, you know, it's the nicest thing in the world to see a bully get their comeuppance. In my opinion, I just think, you know, if they're constantly bullying, and you do see it all the time, you know, put them in the place. Give them a smack. Good on her, I say. Well done.
Anyone with a different opinion?
No, I would say good on you. Just put up with it for a few weeks and it's gone on and nobody's done anything about it. Even if you report it to school, you still get bullied, you know, for reporting it.
Yeah.
You know, the bully's still at large. So if you take action like she did, and that's it. And like Gunn says, it's the end. Stops.
Yeah, and it can be very effective, especially if they've been putting up with it for so long, because unfortunately, if you're not giving anything back, then sadly, that can make the bullying worse, because they think you're an easy target and they think, well, they're not going to do anything about it, so I'm just going to keep going at them. So when you do react, it's such a shock. They can often think, OK, better not do that again then.
And they also bully other people, because they've got away with it once. They think they can do it to everyone, you know? And so you'll find a bully doesn't usually just bully one person. They bully a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they get a bit of a reputation sometimes, you know, around, well, you know what I mean? I'm this big... I've seen it lots of times in my life. Time and you know, someone finally stands up to them and gives them a good whack, and you know, they're bullies aren't tough as a rule of thumb. They've just got that front to actually, you know, push the boundaries and see what responses they get. I'm all for it. Give them a good whack.
Jamie,
I don't know, it's hard to agree, I suppose I'm thinking back to bullying at school and stuff. I got bullied at school. That's how I learned to run fast. If you do stand up, I've seen bullies stood up to and they stand down. Because bullies go on to be bullies
your reputation as a bully as well. It's hard to sort of rebel against a bully. I know, I've been to a few schools in my time, and particularly one school I got bullied, and I didn't know the guy was a bully at the time, but I stood up to him. And everybody said, gosh, you know, how brave you are doing that. I didn't even know it was a bullet, you know, I just thought he was an idiot. And suddenly, you know, you're a hero for no reason whatsoever. And this perception that a bully is a bully, and if they know about it, they get away with it.
They do get away with it, yeah. And you do need to. If you can't, you know, you go down the channels and you tell the schools, or you tell, you know, people in authority, you know, in the police sometimes, you know, you got this person, you know, if they don't do anything about it, or their hands are tied because of all the red tape that they have to follow, you know, take it into your own hands.
Yeah.
I've got no issue with it at all.
The school really should do more. But I guess it's really difficult because they're not going to be there all the time. Yeah. They can't see it all.
Side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just think of the amount of paperwork that brings, you know, being a...
And it, as you said before, it can make things worse because, you know, as you come out of the school, then you're not under that kind of umbrella of safety. So, you know, it can become worse, which is why I think, I have seen it. I've seen it several times. I remember a friend of mine, and he was just constantly getting bullied. I mean, we were in our 20s then, and this guy just came for him everywhere, you know. And I used to say to you know, my friend, I say, just give him a good hiding, just give him a smack. I mean, I know it's not the best advice, but he was getting worse and worse, you know. Yeah. Just getting worse and worse, and he was making his life a misery. And one particular day he just snapped. Give him it was a cracking punch, I have to say. and the guy just went, I mean, the shock of, you know, on his face of horror. But I tell you what, it stopped it. Mm-hmm. It stopped it. Good job.
Yeah, interesting. I'm agree. And I've been in that situation as well, and actually ended up having to do that very thing, and it did work. Yeah. So yay. Okay, well, that's it from us today. Thank you all very much for coming in. Jamie Stonehewer, thank you.
Thank you, Hannah.
Grant Joel, thank you.
Thank you.
And Steve Holmes, thank
you. Stephen.
Yes, I'm not telling you off. And have a great weekend. Howard Brereton is coming up after the news with Spain Today. And I'm not actually in on Monday. I will be in on Tuesday. So there's a best of TRE in the afternoon. Well, debatable whether it's best of, but I'd like to think it is. Going out on Monday. So I will see you on Tuesday. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be sunny wherever you are, all over Spain. So have a good one.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.